Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. So I guess we got some pretty exciting news.
Yeah, definitely.
Some industry recognition.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty
so
cool.
So to speak.
I was kind of surprised. So, Epidia Ravichal,
I hope that's right. Epidia Ravichal?
I apologize if I mispronounced his name. Anyway, the point is he created the Emmy Award-winning Dread RPG, which is the game that uses the block tower as a task resolution mechanic anyway.
Yeah, the Jenga tower.
We were talking about that in the time travel episode.
Yeah. Trying not to say Jenga because that's trademark. But
yeah, but he calls it the Jenga tower too.
He does?
Oh. Because he has to.
And it is a Jenga tower.
Really? Because whenever I read the Dread RPG, it just said block tower. Block tower. A tower of blocks.
Oh, okay.
It didn't actually say Jenga. I mean, it made allusions to the fact that, yeah, you can buy a tower at, you know, the game store.
It was, but block, cough, cough.
Yeah.
Jenga tower.
Yeah. But anyway, the point is, he actually posted a comment on our time travel episode because he actually listened to it. So we got some industry cred, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Anybody recommended his other game?
Oh, yeah, which is Time and Temp.
Maybe Time and Temps.
Sorry. Well,
sorry, Epidia. Yeah.
We have bought them.
Yeah, we have the game.
We never read the cover.
Because the insides are so good.
Yeah. Like, it's not like they print the rules on the outside. But he had said that it was similar to the idea we had in our time travel episode,
mm-hmm.
Talking about sort of zeros and affecting the sort of time-space continuum, not reaching paradox.
Yeah, when he described it on the comment as kind of using a number puzzle to determine what happened. And when I first heard that, I was kind of like, yeah, it sounds like I'd be playing Sudoku at the table. But
that's what I thought, too.
But after reading through it, yeah, it sounds really, really cool. And I encourage everyone to go and try and take a look at it because it is really cool.
Yeah.
We're actually going to try it. We're going to try the actual rules in Time and Temps because we got really excited about playing a time travel game.
Hmm.
But we're also going to try the idea we had in that episode and then compare.
Mm-hmm.
Using kind of the same premise, even the same character types, and see which one we had more fun. And we'll let you know
In
a later episode.
Absolutely.
Chris, you didn't go to see it with us, but we actually went and saw Thor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess because we're so dedicated in preparation for this topic.
Yeah.
Actually, it was because we missed Super 8 or something. No, it was because Wayne wanted to, because we had mentioned the Marvel superhero Thor a few times, and Wayne wanted to see what all the fuss was about, though we weren't really fussing about him.
No.
So we went and saw that, and unfortunately we saw it in 3D.
We saw
because,
Soul.
Yeah.
Because here it's just S-O.
Ah, yeah.
Soul.
Yeah, the katakana, the Japanese character, when they don't have a TH sound, so it's...
But
they didn't have like an A at the end, like Soa?
No, because
Soul.
Yeah, I saw the poster with my girlfriend when I went to visit her, and she's like, oh, do you want to see that? And I'm like, I don't even know what movie that is, because I'm trying to read it, I'm like, Mighty Soul. I'm like, are they trying to say like, Mighty Soul, or who is this? And then I'm like, oh, it's Thor, and there's just no TH sound. I'm like, oh, yeah, because there's, Andy Hopkins. That's what it is,
yeah. That's the reason my wife was so excited about naming the kid Thor, is that because it sounds Soa. It sounds like, sounds like Soar, like the sky, Sora.
Or Soar, as in, man, you beat your kid till he's sore.
Yeah.
Or now, So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, which is so much better, too.
Yeah. So apathetic, that So. So we saw it in 3D, and it pretty much kind of reinforced my opinion of 3D as something I never need to see again.
Mm-hmm.
But I now have 3D glasses because
they make
you buy the 3D glasses unless you bring your own.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, we thought you rented them, right? Mm-hmm. We thought you paid it for
or deposited.
Yeah, deposited.
And then you get it back, but no.
Yeah, we try to give them back. They're like, no, they're yours. I'm like, great.
That's weird. All the ones I've ever been to, you just pay 500 yen to get them for the movie. And I figured that was a big draw for the movie theaters.
Well, it was like you keep them and you get 100 yen off when you go see a 3D movie. So I guess
in the future.
Yeah, you go see like 5 3D movies and they've paid for themselves.
Anyway. So the 3D aside, yeah, the movie was okay.
It was a summer movie.
It was a summer movie. I thought if people are not familiar with the Marvel version or spin on Norse mythology, the gods actually look like space gods.
Mm.
They're very, a lot of science fiction elements. I mean, it came out in the 60s, so I don't know. There was not much of a Norse mythology boom in the 60s, but there certainly was a science fiction boom. So Yeah, it looks all right when they're in Asgard, but then when the Asgardians come, Thor looks, his costume actually looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Warriors 3 come down onto Earth, everything looked clearly like everything was made out of plastic on the costume.
Yeah, it did.
And it looked really flimsy, so.
Yeah,
that I didn't like so much.
I think I saw a couple shields kind of wiggle. Times when they got hit, you know?
Yeah.
You're kind of like, oh, you know, they kind of don't believe that quote unquote metal shield blocked that blow when you just saw it wiggle.
Or you know how when it like, they can add the sound where it sounds like a metal shield is landing on the ground, but they can't change that a piece of plastic, like plastic is going through this, you know.
Yeah,
it travels about as fast as a piece of plastic.
Yeah, you do it slow motion and you kind of see it like bend and flex. You're like, yeah, a solid shield wouldn't do that.
Was the Captain America shield in that movie okay at least?
Oh, we haven't seen that yet.
Has Captain America looking forward to that one.
Yet? No.
Yeah,
okay. We sell a Captain America costume at work and it doesn't have the shield included. And we sell a Thor one, no hammer.
Can you buy the shield separately?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Because I know they sell some costumes where the shield is separate, but then that same site will also
you'd think so.
Carry the shield.
that would make sense.
Oh well. Yeah, I had the story was it was a summer movie, but with a villain plot, and I'm not going to do any spoilers for people that haven't seen it. But the villain Loki, his plot. Oh, sorry. Hey, people not familiar with Norse mythology at all or the Marvel comics.
You will be by the end of this episode.
Yeah, well, what am I doing in this movie? I thought this was about so.
Yeah, so.
But it was far more elaborate than it had to be, to the point where all his plots and that just don't make any sense after a certain point. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Home Shopping Network of plotting.
He goes, pick and choose.
Here's my plot. Here's,
call the next 20 minutes, get an extra scheme? What?
No, it's like he goes, like, well, here's my idea for my plot. And he doesn't have any minions, but let's say if he had minions, I'm like, ooh, that sounds really good. That's not all. And we'll do this. And he's like, oh, that sounds okay. You know, it's that extra twist. And he goes,
but
hold
wait,
on.
There's more.
Yeah, there's more. If we do it now, we can also do this. And I'm going to throw in a set of steak knives. Because it was, you're like, okay. Oh, come what? Yeah, it got to the point where they're trying to make it too elaborate and twists and turns just to show that, you know, Loki is the trickster god.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's very clever, but then you're like, well, if you're so clever, you probably would have realized those last two steps were completely unnecessary and don't make sense. No?
Okay.
He goes, well, they don't make sense to you, mortal.
He's like, no, they just don't make sense in general. You tell me how they make sense.
He's just OCD in the end.
Well, why don't you have a seat and turn around? Okay.
Runs
off.
That's his trick. Yeah. And gone.
Chris Hemsworth, he was good for Thor. I mean, that was a difficult role to cast.
I thought that was pretty good.
He looked the part.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, they really went with the most recent incarnation of Thor's costume, which was a good choice. Because it kind of combines like the old classic Thor costume, which just looks like some version of Superman's costume with odd winged helmet, with the more martial armored type that he had in the 80s. When I first started reading Thor and collecting Thor comics, he was, I don't know, his bones were really brittle, so he was encased in this armor, and he had a beard and a helmet that covered half his face, a little bit of visor, and he looked really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So that the new version of Thor, he kind of combines both elements. It's a little bit armored, and but still kind of looks like a superhero costume. And it looks really good on the screen, unlike the other Asgardians, where it looked kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Whatever reason, Thor's costume looked pretty sensational.
Yeah, Thor looked really good, and like you said, when you know the other three guys come down, you're like walking on the streets, like, what is this, like a Renaissance fair? That's kind of what they look like, you know?
I think there was a line from the characters, one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. guys is like, this looks like there's a Renaissance.
Oh, yeah,
there
I think it was actually in the movie. And it's supposed to be a joke, but it's like, no, you're right. They kind of do look like they're like a Renaissance fair. Like, that armor doesn't look like it could stop anything. It was still okay.
I would think that if people are excited about the Avengers movie coming out and they thought that they needed to see Thor to kind of get Thor's story, I don't think you do need to see it. Mm-hmm. There was nothing you really needed to watch in the movie.
It's not really like an origin story. It's just kind of like a Thor story.
It was kind of like tying Thor to Earth story.
Is it good?
I would say
it's enjoyable. I mean, like, I didn't walk away.
There's nothing that I saw in the movie that I needed to see on the big screen.
Okay.
Even though there were special effects and it is a superhero movie, so a lot of people might think, well, if I'm going to spend money for a movie theater prices, it's got to be for a big story or an action extravaganza, like a superhero movie. And I'm like, nah, you can wait till DVD to watch it. And if you only want to watch it because of the Avengers, then you don't need to watch it.
Okay.
And if you only want to watch it because you like Norse mythology, then you don't need to watch it.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm waiting for the dollar day at the rental shop.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. Like, I didn't walk away from it going, God, that sucked. But it was kind of like, yeah, it kind of was what it was. You know?
Okay.
And I don't know, I kind of like Norse mythology and hadn't read the Thor comic book at all. So it kind of took me a little bit to get into the Marvel version of Thor because I would kind of see stuff and I'm like, well, you know, that kind of different from what I heard, or I didn't really think that happened. Then I'm kind of like, all right, then I kind of had to like take a step back and like, okay, it's a different take on mythology. And then it was kind of like, all right, there was enough little, I guess, tidbits from actual Norse mythology dropped in that kind of kept me happy.
Okay.
So I'm like, oh, they did do that. Oh, okay.
And I think that leads right into our topic for today. So we're going to be doing our second Pantheon Pandemonium, and you can still catch our first one, We Do Voodoo, which is about the Voodoo Pantheon, or the Loa. And so today we're going to be doing Norse mythology.
In case you couldn't tell.
Yeah. Well, yeah, hopefully. People are probably thinking it's like, so today we're going to be doing Egyptian mythology. It has nothing to do with Thor. Unfortunately, there's no Egyptian superhero. Sorry. No. But I think with Greek mythology, the Western world is probably most familiar with Norse mythology or really familiar with Norse mythology. So the challenge for us is going to be in this episode is to not make, you know, 1,000+ year old mythology fresh for you, but to try to think of different spins or at least the most interesting aspects of Norse mythology that you can include at the gaming table. So to give us a kind of a brief overview of thousands of years of history or mythology is going to be Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris, and I'll be giving you an overview of Norse mythology. The main things we're looking at talking about today were the aspects of multiple worlds, in that Norse mythology had the idea of a giant world tree. Ymir?
It's Yggdrasil.
Yggdrasil.
A lot of Ys and a lot of Gs.
In seemingly all of the names, actually.
Yeah.
But within this world tree, there are 9 different realms. We want to talk about the gods because they're the ones that have the most stories and probably the most likely that someone would end up using in their campaign. And to top it off with Ragnarok at the end. Their kind of apocalyptic Judgment Day kind of end game story, which is really interesting, and there's a lot of things to go on with it.
So it's appropriate we're saving that for the end.
So I think maybe the first thing is where they are. Like, where does Norse mythology, what are all these different worlds?
Mm-hmm. So there's 9 different realms there. I suppose everybody knows the famous ones, Asgard and Midgard. I don't know, you guys saw them as well. Is there anything that jumped out at you as really being really interesting?
Well, I think what I liked about the different realms, and there's a lot of aspects, it's just like the different races live on in a different world.
Mm-hmm.
So unlike although Tolkien borrows heavily from Norse mythology.
I would choose the term ripped off, but yeah.
All right. We're going for a bit softer.
Yeah, he's fortunate there's no trademark laws back then. He rips off Norse mythology, but he puts the elves and the dwarves in the same world. And I know the elves kind of have their the gray realms, I believe. But in Norse mythology, the elves, or the 2 kinds of elves, the dark elves and the light elves, they live in different worlds.
Yeah, Svartalheim and Alfheim?
Yeah, Alfheim. And then the dwarves live in Nidaveller. Yeah, and I really hope we don't have any Scandinavian listeners. I really, really hope. And then the giants, the fire giants and the frost giants, they live in 2 different worlds. Mm-hmm. In Thor, I should say about the movie, I think they did a pretty good job with Jotunheim, where the realm of the frost giants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed that they didn't even reference Muspelheim and the fire giants, because like you didn't have to really do anything with them, but my feeling was like, if you're gonna do the Norse mythology thing, like kind of the 2 worlds at the beginning of time were the frost giant world and the fire giant world.
Which one do they show in the movie?
That they only reference the ice giant, the frost giant world.
They show 3 worlds. They show the Asgard, where the Azir, the most common Norse gods, the most commonly known Norse gods live.
Odin and Scepter. Yeah.
And of course they show Midgard or Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got to bring, that's the kind of the point of story, bringing Thor down to Earth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then they show Jotunheim where the frost giants live.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty good. I guess it's supposed to be a realm of ice, so it does suffer from the, you know, the kind of, you know, the science fiction alien problem where they all look the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody looks the same and apparently wears no clothes. So it's not a richly diverse realm, but mm-hmm. I guess if it's a land of ice, they certainly captured that.
Yeah, like...
And if your image of,
ice.
Your image of a frost giant is a hugely muscled man, then they've got that too.
All right.
I don't think we saw any female frost giants.
Well, it's kind of like, how could you tell?
And also, how could you get that in a movie if everybody's being naked?
Well, it'd be be real easy in the movie if everyone was naked.
Well, they were naked, so you would be able to tell.
Not how you tell, but how do you get that with a rating that young kids can go to in a movie?
Oh, yeah, no, I got you.
Oh, yeah, okay, cool.
I didn't get you, Wayne.
Yeah, I didn't get you. That's fine. I'm used to it.
I'm glad that I clarified the point you understood, though.
I was going to say, like, the other thing about the Frost Giants and Thoris, they seem to change size inadvertently. Like, it was kind of like...
Well, that kind of follows the actual mythology, then.
Well, I suppose.
Well, some of the giants in mythology, and I know we're kind of diverging a little bit from the actual world, but some of the giants are huge, mm-hmm. and some of them less so. I mean, there's a lot of crossbreeding within Norse mythology.
Yeah.
So people are sons of a god and a giantess, and I'm not sure how big the gods are. They can change size.
Well, you know, it's also...
I think there's like a realm of... There's a wall made from the eyebrow of a giant.
That's what the fortress in Vanaheim was made from.
No, a huge mountain wall made from the eyebrows of the ancestral giant Ymir.
Isn't like the world made of Ymir? Like his skull was made into the sky and
So Midgard is separated from Jotunheim by these eyebrows.
By his eyebrows. That's some big eyebrows.
So he's huge.
Well, he's a big giant.
Yeah. But it's something worth mentioning, though not really spending that much time on, is that Norse mythology is based off of oral traditions. So I'm sure a lot of these stories coming from different parts of Scandinavia, you know, they tell different versions and different things. So,
well, we found like there's two. Helmheim is in some versions,
mm-hmm.
but in other versions there's Nidarvellir.
Right.
So that even when we're trying to collect, because I mean they only started writing this down about like the 11th century, and most of our stuff comes from the 13th century by like. A guy, honestly, his name is Snorri.
Bit of a boring read, but
I guess so. That's what I thought too. Yes,
but yeah,
Snorri's Sturluson. Yeah,
and there's some debate as to whether the Sturluson. Dark elves are dwarves or there's a difference between them or vice versa. But anyway, yeah, it's not worth spending that much time on. But just so you know, that some of the stuff
that much more time on.
Yeah. We already spent some time on it. Yeah, yeah.
But you know, and not to get. To reopen any edition wars, but you know, people were complaining about one thing that was lost from D&D 3rd edition or 3.5 and D&D 4th edition was how they kind of simplified the cosmology.
Hmm.
And that's a shame because when you think about it, the cosmology is all, a fantasy cosmology is already pretty simplified.
Mm-hmm.
So just, and people can obviously see what you can do with these different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have races coming from different worlds, it's certainly the separation. And wow, for a movie I'm not recommending, I'm certainly referencing a lot. But they actually do a reasonable job of kind of playing up the separation.
Yeah.
So I think Wayne really liked, the bridge Bifrost or Bifrost.
I didn't like it at first, but because I mean, like all they're supposed to say is like it's a rainbow bridge. Like I imagine it actually just kind of looking like a rainbow. Sorry, like in Norse mythology, it's like a rainbow bridge, right? But in the movie, it was kind of like this really long. Bridge, perfectly flat, made out of really reflective, kind of translucent rainbow crystal.
Hmm.
And at first I was kind of like, well, all right. But then it actually really grew on me.
Well, in a sense, it was a rainbow bridge with kind of a rainbow teleportation device or something like that. They've kind of split it. There's the actual kind of what you would imagine would be a rainbow bridge, but then they have
almost like
this device to kind of shoot you to the other realm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And shoot you to other or different realms, actually.
A rainbow catapult or something.
Yeah, it was pretty much like a rainbow cannon,
like a transporter. Cool. You know,
yeah.
So there's a big, massive god instead of like a little Star Trek person, a little
Scottish guy.
Yeah,
I'd like to go on the rainbow.
Yeah, no, but I thought that was pretty good. Like just a different take on the Rainbow Bridge. Yeah.
Hmm.
And if you and of course we're naturally thinking of fantasy when you think of all these different races.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you were, and I think everybody can kind of is familiar with that, like kind of cosmology and, you know, using magic to get from these different realms.
Yeah.
But when we think of aliens and in a science fiction game, and as we said, these realms, the the Light Elves, they just live in Alfheim. They don't all collect on Midgard. And in fact, in the mythology, the dwarves and mortals very rarely interacted. And the Light Elves maybe never, or very rarely. Mm-hmm. Although there was some kind of what the Japanese would call kami, like a kind of an animism or animistic style of god that would interact with mortals. But it's very much a separation. So if you imagine
fairies,
like
fairies.
Yes, sure. Yeah, spirits within objects and stuff.
Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. I was going
to
say...
I'll come back to that aliens point after, Wayne.
Sorry. I forgot you making the aliens point. No, I was going to say, at least in Norse mythology, it seems like almost the only people who can cross into other realms are the gods. So you don't really have stories of, you know, mortals traveling to Alfheim or... you know, these different nine worlds that are hung on Yggdrasil. Mm-hmm. So, and I guess the same would kind of go for, like, you know, the dwarves, the light elves, and the dark elves, and that's kind of why they don't, the more mortal beings don't interact a lot. It's kind of like only the Vanir and the Aesir can travel across these worlds, and so you don't have the interaction.
Mm-hmm. You know, with that, I think, even though we think of this a lot as fantasy, like you mentioned with aliens, I think this kind of mythology would work really well in a sci-fi kind of setting. Especially if you were to separate into different worlds, literally being different worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. And just because then you really have to think about, and I think in SF you do think about traveling a lot. Like, how do you do it? And I think that's one of the number one questions that Game Master needs to answer or have an answer for is how do they go to these different worlds? Do they go on these slow ships or do they go on faster than light travel?
Or
do they go through
bridges.
These gates? Yeah, or Rainbow Bridge or what? And what Wayne is talking about. Is there only like one group that can really travel between them? It gets into a little like Dune, where you had the guild.
Fun idea that would be! Like
the navigators,
to have like the Midgard world be like the human world, and then there's this other one, Asgard. It's a planet out there, and that's the only one that has like FTL technology or something.
That's kind of what they did for Thor, at least in the movie, a little bit.
Yeah.
Or that's the way it kind of seemed to me, and that Asgard was kind of like a place out in space. It's kind of other planet. That was kind of not really a planet, but, and when they would travel across the Rainbow Bridge, yeah, you would have this kind of big cannon that kind of shot you, and you'd see all these stars flying past you, then boom, you kind of landed on this other place,
you know,
like a big flash of light, meaning you could never do a sneak attack, but...
But you could.
Well, apparently you could, because they got there, but...
Oh, they did.
I remember when everybody
landed... Sorry, spoiler.
When everybody landed, just like, boom, you know, and it's like, we're here,
No. Ding dong.
But then there was also reference. There are other realms, or sorry, other paths to the different worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it could be a case of just trying to find those. Or if we look at between Midgard and Jotunheim, there's those eyebrows.
The eyebrow mountains.
The eyebrow mountain walls. Why eyebrows? That's so bizarre.
You prefer the clouds being
clouds made
of Yuri's brain? That sits okay with you? And the sea is in blood?
I'm taking issue with the eyebrows.
Well, how about it said, like, in the version I read, it said, like, the maggots that lived in his body, that's what became the dwarves. And you're okay with that? But the eyebrows stick in your craw?
Yeah.
What did this craw turn into?
What?
Never mind.
Sorry. What did the craw turn into?
Bad joke is. Yes.
Yeah, so
for those of you who are still listening.
So there is that, like, separation between the realms and the case of, like, if somebody, like, you put up these barriers and then, of course, people trying to break them down. So maybe there are easier ways once you can get by the barrier. And, of course, one person who... constantly would find different ways to beat the system was
Loki.
Yeah,
because he's smart, even though, as Lyle mentioned in the movie, kind of seemed like he tossed on a lot of plans that didn't make a whole lot of sense. But traditionally, he's supposed to be pretty, or maybe not smart, but clever, and
it's
kind of like a trickster god.
You know, what's funny about the Norse gods in general is there are a lot of stories where they're just not that clever. Like, there's one story about Thor getting outfoxed by a giant. Like, not beaten down or broken, just, you know, outmaneuvered and it just tricked.
Which one was that?
A giant. It was where they had, like, a drinking competition and...
Oh, yeah!
And basically the giant rigs Thor's drinking horn so that it's never-ending, it's bottomless.
I heard it connects to the sea, actually.
Yeah, so he can never empty it.
Uh-huh.
So he loses the drinking competition. Yeah. Just all these different things. So it's like...
It's not exactly fair.
Wow.
It's funny. It's like Odin, you know, like in the Kingdom of the Blind, the one-eyed man is king. So, you know, Odin actually has one eye, but it's all, like Loki is like...
I've got
eyes. No, but, you know, in the Kingdom of Gods where everyone's a bit special, you know, you don't have to be that smart to be the trickster god, the genius. It's almost like some hillbilly mythology where it's like, well, he got up to the ninth grade. That boy's smart.
Yeah, speaking of hillbillies, going on to kind of this hillbilly rant, like, not... there's some debate as to what Loki actually is. Kind of whether he's actually, like, a god, or he's actually, like, a giant.
Or a hill redneck.
But...
Connect the dots quickly, Wayne, because the hillbillies are going, what are you saying? There's some question as to what we are?
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, if you look through... there's a lot of stuff in Norse mythology. Jesus Christ, am I going to make point?
I'm sorry, Lyle said the hillbillies. I imagine some guy, you know, like in his tractor or something, beeping pigs like with an iPod listening to a gaming podcast. Yeah.
Like, you're calling
something
me
here
a
doesn't
hillbilly?
Quite match.
Damn straight, 4E ain't D&D. Sorry. Sorry, Wayne.
Oh, I was going to say, it's kind of interesting that, like, throughout the stories of Norse mythology, you always hear about, you know, the gods taking... giants as wives, or kind of like the other way around.
Yeah.
And yeah. I guess that's kind of makes them more human in a sense, in the fact that you have like other pantheons that are like mortal enemies, but it kind of doesn't really make them human. It's kind of, you know, reduces the two sides into side A is good, side B is bad, and nobody from the two sides are going to get along. But it doesn't really take into account that there are individuals on either side who, you know, may have different feelings. Whereas in Norse mythology, yeah, okay, the giants or the Jotun are generally seen as bad, but that didn't stop, you know, like Thor from having a kid with one of them.
Well, like I see it as and I do find it as interesting as you do that they are so human.
Hmm.
And like you said, the giants are kind of generally seen as bad. They're kind of adversarial, I'd say, more than bad.
Yeah, okay.
And I would say. In that they're like people. There's good ones and there's bad ones. Mm. There's jerks and nice guys as well. And it seems to be the way with all of the different realms. For it, I seem a little heavier on the jerk side of things, but
Well, yeah, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, Loki is. I mean, he's the trickster god,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times he's the foil to the other gods, and he does play a large role in Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
But he also helps them out.
Yeah,
in a lot of the stories. So he's a very human,
absolutely
a human character, and he, like you guys are saying, it's like a lot of the gods are very human, like Thor, you know, his emotions, and people have tied the link when we have the kind of this stereotype of the Viking where they won't back down against impossible odds and they won't run away because that's the Viking way, but that stereotype has no basis
in reality?
Basis in reality, like nothing, there's no historical record, or if you even look at the mythological record, is the gods will run away from impossible odds.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, Thor will take off, and he's their favorite god, and they love him because he is so like them, or at least he's their ideal. I mean, think about, you look at how stupid Thor is, how much he runs away, having sex with giantesses.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, that's your ideal? Yeah. It's like some hillbilly ideal, I guess. Speaking of hillbillies, again, Loki has given birth to, is either the father or the mother of half of the characters in Norse mythology.
Yeah.
Like, Hel's his daughter.
Yeah.
The big serpent.
Yeah,
the world serpent. The Fenris?
Fenris.
Yeah, the big wolf.
Yeah.
Sired those, and not to mention, he actually was the mother of Odin's eight-legged horse, Sleipnir.
Yeah.
It was like, what was he doing? Like,
where do you find the time to do everything else?
Well, I don't know. I think it's a little bit weird, because like the story about like Sleipnir is, they had like a giant build the Asgard castle, pretty much. And they said, okay, you have to build it in 3 seasons. And Loki was the one who kind of set that up. And when it looked like the guy was about to do it, thanks to the use of this great horse he had, all the gods said, okay, Loki, this is your fault that he's going to do it. So you got to find a way to make sure he doesn't do it so we don't have to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
And what did Loki do? Turn himself into a horse and, you know.
To distract the
other horse. And they don't say exactly what happened, but then they said a couple days later, Loki gave birth to this one. And it's like, what were you doing? You know?
Well,
you
didn't. Obvious.
It's obvious, but it's like, did you have to take it that far? Couldn't you just have gotten the horse to follow you and run away and then change back?
Well,
like, you didn't have to seal the deal, really, you know?
Well, and that's assuming that sealing the deal would be a bad thing for Loki.
I mean, maybe he liked it. Yeah, I don't know.
Who knows?
Well, there's certainly none of the other, gods or goddesses were giving him the action. Maybe that's how he had to get it.
But, you know, it's like you were playing an epic campaign. That could be, it's such a rich material because the gods are so personable. You know, you can treat them on a one-to-one level as compared to, say, some kind of omnipotent or omniscient one. And that would be really difficult to play as a game master. But gods where you can actually speak to or trick or defeat.
Absolutely.
I hadn't thought about that. That's really good. That's maybe why D&D borrows so heavily from Norse mythology.
Yeah. Does it?
Well, at least superficially.
I think it's more because D&D comes out of Tolkien, which borrows so heavily from
Norse mythology. Yeah, so.
But then I think they stripped a lot away. And they stripped away the hillbilly aspect, which makes
the bestiality. That might have been a hard product to sell. Okay.
I just want all our hillbilly listeners to know I did not connect bestiality to hillbillies. That's Lyle that did not connect that. Anyway, but, you know, all the familial relationships. You know, there's the brothers, sisters, or
second cousins.
Just all listeners, though, Lyle did not connect that part to hillbillies. That was Wayne.
This here is my cousin and my wife.
Sometimes when you look at a traditional, and this is not a criticism of published material, but I'm just saying, when you look at the cosmology, it does seem a little bit bland. Mm-hmm. And the connections between the gods seem very, very separate. It's almost as if when they've made this fantasy cosmology, they've kind of done like sort of a microcosm of not a particular pantheon, mm-hmm. but they've actually done a microcosm of all the world pantheons, and they've kind of mashed them together. And it's like, well, this sun god has no relationship to any of these other gods, and this is the god of the elves. And then some people elaborate, and then they say, well, there's actually this whole pantheon for the elves separately, but normally when you look at the core 10 or 12 gods, they don't really seem to have any stories with each other.
Yeah,
or they might have like a creation story or some war story, but none of these, you know, Thor loses his hammer and goes to Loki, and then they go the story of trying to find the hammer, and it gives so much flavor to those characters, or just Thor just being a dunce and he's being outfoxed by what we would traditionally think are kind of dumb and slow creatures, the giants, and it's like, well, hey, these giants aren't that slow, or at least Thor is slow.
Not so much that, you know, the giants aren't dumb, it's like just Thor's a little bit dumber.
And it gets into what Chris is saying, and it can give the game master so much more. It takes the pressure off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the players have just outfoxed the god, but how do we do that? Like from a kind of a Judeo-Christian background, that's incomprehensible, because we have omniscient and omnipotent. Or God is omniscient and omnipotent.
Right.
Even Jesus and the other incarnations, once something is elevated to sainthood, we strip away all the humanity from them, and it's like they're perfect. But when we look at the actual gods of other cultures, they're not perfect.
Yeah, the only one that was similar is Greek, I think. Oh, sorry, I interrupted you, but...
I agree. Like the Greek gods were very flawed as well. They were almost, though, I would say, just argue a little bit, they're almost like a Greek, like the Greek dramas and traditions. It's very heightened, very elevated, like, you know, their flaws are just that much more
everything's more extreme,
whereas
to the max.
here they're having drinking contests.
I would argue that Thor won that drinking contest. He may have lost a contest, but he walked away with a bottomless tankard.
No, he's drinking seawater at the end there.
He didn't notice.
I'm going to the bathroom a lot, but I'm not getting drunk.
It's salty.
Where's my buzz? I just keep wanting drinking more. You know, I guess alcohol does dehydrate you, or salt water.
All right, now Thor is really an idiot. This beer is salty.
I guess the Azure didn't have any taste, but
not.
And also with the richness of the cosmology is the fact that there's actually, it's very clear that there's two types of gods, at least. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's other beings that are like gods or godlike, but they're not actually like a pantheon. And there's the Azir, which is like Thor, Odin.
Yeah, what we'd think of as the gods.
Heimdall, And then there's Vanir, and I guess the two more famous ones or most famous ones are Frey and Freya. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they were sent over as like hostages, which is very medieval or very old world, where you send over hostages to ensure good conduct. Yeah, people, fans of the Game of Thrones and Clash of Kings are very familiar with how they incorporate that.
The wards,
The wards. Theon Greyjoy.
I thought it was kind of interesting, at least in the Norse mythology, is like, Freya and Bridge, they got sent over as wards. And the Aesir sent over wards, one of which was Mimir. Mm-hmm. And what did the Vanner do? Mm-hmm. They killed him and they cut off his head and sent it back to Odin. And yet the two types of gods are still, they still kind of went on with their peace treaty, you know, and they're still kind of one group now, despite the fact that, you know, they kill each other and kill hostages.
Yeah, it's hard to assign, like, not to pick on D&D, but hard to assign alignments to gods, because mm-hmm. the gods are so human in that, yeah, maybe I'll do this one day and this the next day, but, you know, maybe I'll rage and...
I believe that would be neutral.
Okay,
true neutral.
Okay, I suppose. Or
you have to maintain the balance. Yeah, chaotic neutral. I'll do what I want.
But also really? when you cut off a god's head, like, Mimir was still alive, or kinda.
Well, it's only because Odin, like, prepared his head with, like, special magic so that the knowledge wouldn't be lost, and so Mimir could still talk to Odin.
So, right.
Yeah, that kind of changes the equation a little.
But then again, he doesn't have a body.
True.
Would you really want to have a head?
Would I want to?
Or be a head?
No, no,
sorry,
not at all.
Not have a head. Be a head.
Would you want to have a head?
I don't think so. I would ever choose that, no. But,
I was kind of thinking about that when we were doing cyborgs and talking about the brains in the jar. Because that's essentially what he was.
Oh, Mimir?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so people have already ripped off North
America. There you go.
Brain in the jar. And perhaps he was, sarcastic.
Well, the thing is about the Vanner that I thought was quite interesting is the fact that they basically trace, or they think that these are just old fertility gods.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's their way of kind of preserving these old fertility gods. They're just layered over the new. And it's not like combining, like when we talked about voodoo, they were kind of combining Christianity with the old and making their new, these new types of gods by giving like Christian names to old African gods.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just saying, no, we'll keep them, and then we'll put the other one on top and not replace. And then that really gets, we should be doing that with other things. Like when we look at, and I think some really interesting stuff, such as, like you really like this game, Chris, Fading Suns. I was actually just buying myself time to remember the name.
Yes, absolutely.
You like this game, Chris, please read my mind. Fading Suns, and when I was going through Fading Suns, and they were showing all these like ancient alien runes, these like, you know, maybe the lost creator race or whatever. And they're like, we don't know what these are. And you're like, great, those are great story hooks.
Yeah.
But another spin on that is, yeah, we know what these are because we've layered our own cosmology on, you know, and the cosmology just gets more elaborate and extended as opposed to one supplanting the other or one just like Romans and Greeks and they just change all the names.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, looking through history, it's surprising how common that kind of practice is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And, well, like you mentioned with Ragnarok, you know, the story of Ragnarok is that it will be the end of one world in a great battle and this whole new world will begin. And that's what how the Christians presented themselves.
Yeah. They said, yeah, you know this new god that you kind of referred to in your Ragnarok stories?
Here he is.
Here he is. It's like, oh, really? I didn't know the world ended. No, I did. Last week.
I must have been sleeping or something.
Oh, okay. But yeah, it's a lot could be done with that. It's just
instead of replacing stuff, just build whatever mythology or civilization on top of it and incorporate it into that. Like if you're doing like you said, a Fading Suns, like a sci-fi game, you
can have the runes, and maybe people don't connect it, but there actually is that connection, and it's not necessarily these lizard men that repopulated the world, but they don't lose what they had. So, and that, if you were to use that concept in your own game, it's forcing you to make your cosmology a little bit more elaborate because you want to have those different layers. And I suppose in a sense, the Greeks kind of had that with the Titans. They were replaced by the gods. But then again, that's kind of replacing, but then some of the Titans were around. So they had that aspect there.
Yeah.
And the Norse, they're was like telling the story. Well, they coexist. And then they have, like Wayne was saying, they have these little relationship, they have their own separate realms, and sending over hostages or wards, and the story's there. So they become an allegory for the real world. Yeah.
I think that's what it was. Like, one of the things I read is it was possibly kind of referencing the different clans that were kind of fighting at the time.
And it's no surprise that, you know, like, from the Norse, we get, like, the trial by jury and adversarial trials.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the story of like getting back to Loki, when you know, they're going to cut off his head, and the deal was that if he lost, then they would get to cut off his head. And when they went to cut it off, he would say, well, you're going to cut off a bit of my neck, and that wasn't part of the deal. And then, yeah, that kind of semantics is like...
So the Vikings are the originators of legalese.
Yeah, the legalese. It's like didn't say you could have my neck, and got to cut through my neck to get my head.
Yeah.
And before the podcast, Chris and Lyle were arguing with me about that, saying, like, no, you could cut off his head, just don't cut any of the neck. And I'm like, I didn't write the story.
Start with a shaving kind of action.
Yeah, there's different aspects. You can cut part of the head off.
Yeah.
And say, we'll let you keep the rest. Yeah. Or you could use semantics back and say, all right, we said we were going to cut the head off, not chop it off. So we'll just slowly carve the head off and not take any of the neck.
Yeah, that was really for you. It was a give, but not well.
But we've mentioned Ragnarok, and we kind of promised, and we've saved the best for last. Hmm. And basically the idea is, and I know other, you know, I mean, we're familiar with, you know, Revelations. Mm. We have our own, or the Christians have their own apocalypse story. Mm-hmm. And there's always the millennium fervor. But I think more so than even Christianity is the Norse definitely had a real clear idea of what the end of the world was going to be, Ragnarok.
Right.
And basically the gods are going to fight all these bad guys from the story, the giants, Loki's clan, his wolf son, and his wolf or his giant serpent's
daughter.
Yeah, Hel. Yeah, and there's going to be like a boat that's going to come that's built from the nails of the dead, and yes, fingernails and I suppose toenails. So that's why the Norse culture, they would cut the nails off a body before they, you know, burned it, mm-hmm. so that there would be less building material for this ship. And just, yeah, and then as Chris was saying, and it's not only the end, but it's also the rebirth. Mm-hmm. And then there was going to be a new land that's going to be populated with, like two people. Mm-hmm. So very Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
And that's how the Christians were able to take advantage of that, because it was also going to be a new unnamed God. Mm-hmm. And guess what? We have a name for him.
We know him. We got a name for him. It's like, wait a minute. How do you know who he is?
Yeah, actually, Ragnarok happened like 1,000 years ago, a couple thousand years ago.
So. I was going to say, the thing that I thought was kind of interesting about Ragnarok as opposed to, like, the Judeo-Christian, apocalypse story, mm-hmm. is that, like, in the Christianity version, like, regular people don't really seem to do that much. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if you're faithful, then you already got taken up to heaven. If you weren't, then you just got burned in hell, mm-hmm. and didn't really do that much. But, like, in Ragnarok, it's like, no, everybody gets to come back and fight. Like, the army of the dead gets raised up again, mm-hmm. and they fight. And the people who are still alive, if they survive the Fimbul winter, they get to fight. Mm-hmm. So even kind of like regular people had a much more proactive role in it, which I think is...
Well, they could forestall it as well. It's not inevitable. Mm-hmm. It's inevitable, but by cutting the nails off, they can forestall it a little bit. Yeah, so it's less... fatalistic, I suppose.
Yeah, actually, I think you said it before, Wayne, about how Thor is supposed to die at the hands of the World Serpent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the World Serpent doesn't have any hands, but yeah.
You know what I mean. Sorry. Thank you for cutting that hair right down the middle.
Yeah, sure.
but you're saying the philosophy of it is that a more fatalistic culture or way of looking at it would have it be, well, I know I'm going to die by this in the coils of this snake, so fuck it, I'm just done with it. Mm. But the way that Thor was written is that, bring it on. When he comes, I'll be ready for him, and I'm gonna...
Yeah, I kind of saw it like that, and, like, I think you could do a lot with that in, like a story, in terms of, the stories you would tell and, like, the kind of characters you would have in the game, is that, you if you know that your character has this sort of, like, ultimate destiny, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and, like, for example, if he's gonna die at the hands or coils of something... Well, that just means until you get there, you're pretty much kind of invincible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of the classic. I mean, even if the Klingon thing, like, today's not my day to die, mm-hmm. or because you know what your ultimate fate is going to be, you can kind of, hey, look, that guy over there, well, he's not the guy I lose to, so let's go. I know I'm going to win, pretty much.
And Hitchhiker's Guide from the Galaxy. So he wasn't scared about anything until he got to Astronaut Beta B.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that was in the. Yeah. I'd forgotten that was in the story, but yeah, I could see that, and yeah, I just kind of liked that. Yeah, they try and forestall Ragnarok, but they also kind of know it's going to happen. It's like, well, we're just going to be ready for it. Yeah. So.
Well, yeah, I like how they have a kind of a different version of the afterlife as well. There's Valhalla, where all the warriors fight and fight all day and drink all night.
Yeah, I thought the way I heard it was is kind of like you're just kind of waiting there for the last battle, and you get to drink until that comes. I don't know, but I think other cultures maybe don't really, well, they don't really have the Ragnarok angle, but they have kind of the, you know, you'll see everybody again that came before you.
Of course, there are afterlives. I mean, of course, Christianity has one as well, but I mean, what do you do in heaven?
Well, exactly. They had a use, you know, that like people in Valhalla. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were going to fight and feast.
Exactly. I mean, that's...
And that's great. But then not only that, but then you're going to come back to do something. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, yeah, heaven is kind of like an end in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So you live to get to heaven and that's it.
Yeah.
You're in heaven and my work is done, I guess. And you get to rest. Yeah. And I guess if you have a short, brutal life... A little rest sounds pretty fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, yeah, in Valhalla, it's like, yeah, you get there, you're going to have a great time when you're there, and then you still have another goal. Like, your work's not done, and then you're going to do this last battle.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very kind of violent end. Just trying to think how to word this so it don't sound so hillbilly. But,
the hillbilly. I can't. Just do it.
No, just violent. There's going to be some fighting.
So first there's some drinking, then there's some fighting.
Well, sometimes you wake up and there's some fighting and then some drinking. I like to mix up my day. Yeah, but if you have that very martial concept, then yeah, you could lend itself to be a very martial culture. And yeah, sometimes it can get a little boring. Like you have the Klingons, and I don't really want to lose our Star Trek listeners, but I think I am with this. I think they're staggeringly boring because. Again, it's just like a science fiction series and series of movies. Yeah, but they're one dimensional, and they're whenever I hear the reference to whatever gods they are, they sound just as boring as they are. It's like, well, what more if your gods sound as boring as you?
Now, I remember in Star Trek: The Next Generation when they went they met a Romulan ship once, and they turned on the screen, and there was a black Romulan there, and that just blew me away. After seeing so many years of Star Trek where the species had all been like just that one-dimensional thing, it's kind of like, whoa, wow.
Oh, I didn't mean about the racial makeup.
But like you were saying how one-dimensional they were, that, and you mentioned before about how the Frostrants, how they all look the same and like that, but it just was a big surprise that they actually did that with Star Trek.
I don't feel like such a racist now for talking about that part of the Thor movie then.
Well, I didn't say like there's anything wrong with it. Like Romulans are supposed to be white or anything. Well, it was just a big surprise that.
Do you want to explain your racist comment, or should we just leave it up to the listeners?
No, all right. So
I think they've made up their minds.
Yeah, they've made up my mind about me already. But I guess now that you've brought it up, Chris. Yeah, I thought it was kind of weird in the Thor movie. Like I said, I hadn't read the comic book before. So one of Thor's kind of, I guess, companions was Asian. Possibly, like, even look Japanese, and, like, when they did kind of, like, the sweeping views of Asgard, everybody was pretty white, and I don't know, it's just kind of jarring to see this.
But not exclusively.
Not exclusively, but, like, well, I don't remember seeing any, like, African-American people in, like, the wide shots of the citizens of Asgard. That kind of makes
sense. I mean, Norse mythology, I mean, the Scandinavian culture was a very, homogenic society.
Well, and that's kind of what I went into it thinking, which is why it was kind of surprising when I saw this guy who looked Japanese as one of Thor's companions. And then Lyle later told me, well, he's kind of going on like the space god theme. He's actually from a different place. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
I can't remember, but he might be Venner.
Okay.
As opposed to Azir. But he, the particular, I can't remember the Warriors 3's name. I think it's just from Marvel Comics. But one of them is actually not of the same race as the other gods. But and that's the Japanese guy. They cast it with, I think it's Asano Tananobu, I think his name is. He's a pretty big actor in Japan.
Okay.
So he's there, and Wayne had a problem, and he's like, oh, this might sound racist, but what was with the Japanese guy?
Yeah.
And I said, and you had no problem with Heimdall being black? You know, which is fine. I mean, I'm fine with Heimdall being black, but If you accept that, how can you take issue with the other guy being Japanese?
Yeah.
So they didn't need to put a black guy on the wide shot because he was Heimdall.
I guess.
And he had pretty. He actually had lines.
Yeah, he had lines. My thing was like I saw Heimdall as being completely separate from the rest of the population. Because you only
saw
him.
They didn't let him in the.
Yeah, you only saw him at Bifrost.
Oh,
it's like it's almost like he was the
guardian. You were happy with the segregation of
Asgard? No, I wasn't saying I was happy with that. I'm saying
Heimdall only fountains or something.
Yeah, well, no, what I was saying is that's kind of what it seemed like. We only saw Heimdall guarding Bifrost, right?
Riding in the back of the bus.
It's no, he stopped. It's like. God damn it. Like, it seemed to me like he was always there, right? He was kind of this special entity. I didn't even really, like, even though I knew Norse mythology, like, in that version, I didn't see them as being part of, like, the same race, even. Like, Heimdall, he's always at Bifrost. He's there. He's the guardian. He is kind of above or separate from the rest of...
He's the same as the other gods. Well, that he's an Azor.
Right, but I kind of didn't get that feeling from watching the Thor movie, which is why I didn't have a problem with Heimdall being African American. Right. But I kind of
well, they really want to call the movie "Driving Mr. Thor."
All right, all right. I'm just never going to live this down at all. All right, so let's just move on.
Mr. Thor, where do you want it? Actually, those people who are fans of The Wire, Heimdall is played by Stringer Bell.
Huh.
So that's a pretty badass character.
Yeah,
and yeah, he's. Pretty badass character in the movie Thor.
Yeah,
yeah, but it was a bit odd that Wayne took issue with the Japanese guy and not the black British guy.
A few of the warriors here, it's kind of like that, I don't know the character's name, but the guy who looked like the freaking bard, it's kind of like, you look more like a Renaissance era, you know, kind of bard than what I would imagine a Norse kind of guy looking like.
So. He's kind of a swashbuckler.
Yeah, exactly. And he kind of acted like a swashbuckler. And I'm kind of like, does that really fit? I don't know. But again, I haven't read any Marvel comics,
yeah.
So I couldn't say anything.
But, to get back into Ragnarok.
And off-racism.
Should have gotten off that bus earlier.
Yeah, well, you guys kept bringing it up.
Not that bus! Stop it!
How did you not put that together? You could have said any other vehicle, but you said bus. You did that to yourself. Anyway, sorry, Lyle, what were you saying?
Listening to, you know, a lot of the, when you're talking about the kind of this fate, not fatalistic, but just the fate, you know, I'm going to die at this time. What if you had a whole culture, and you could put it in a fantasy world, you could put it in a science fiction world, but the culture itself has the idea is not that there's a bullet with my name on it somewhere and you don't have that bullet, but we're going to face off with this other culture at some point. And maybe they even share that idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's within our kind of our cosmology, our mythology, that there's going to be a reckoning. There's going
to
be an end.
And
it's going to be between us and you. And at a certain point, yeah, they are going to clash.
You know, I'm a little bit young to say it, but what about the Cold War era? I mean, I can't say it for sure.
I mean,
sure,
it didn't pay out?
Mm-hmm.
Or pan out, sorry. It didn't pan out, but yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was in Europe in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
and you would watch movies like The Day After, mm-hmm. and that was really real. Like, you would have conversations as kids in grade 6 and grade 7 going, you know, well, I'd rather be in Ground Zero. I'm glad we're here because they're going to, like, just bomb the heck out of this place.
Yeah.
And we don't have to live in that post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
And that was very real for us. And we would just, yeah, no, when it hits, it's just going to be flash. You're not going to feel a thing. You're going to be gone. You maybe be bones.
Yeah.
And it was kind of inevitable. Like, one day, the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc is going to clash with the Western world. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to happen. When it's going to happen, we don't know. And yeah, kind of just building that world, kind of I guess you've updated it to the Cold World. This Ragnarok Cold World concept is it's going to happen. And it gives you, it's very epic, but it gives the game master a little bit of play. Do you just play up that Cold World?
Mm-hmm.
Like the Cold War. Jotunheim? Well, no, I was talking about Jotunheim.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say the sort of tying it back to Ragnarok is like, there's all these, in Norse mythology, there's all these signs that that Ragnarok is coming. You know, it starts with, like, the death of Baldur, and, you know, kind of all these signs kind of point to the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And
you were mentioning about the winter, when the winter comes.
Oh, yeah, the Fimbul winter, like the
and a Game of Thrones, winter is coming.
Hey.
Yeah, yeah, and George R. R. Martin, in a lot of his books, really plays up winter. He really loves that motif. He also likes food.
So he really also likes making us wait for his book.
He loves waiting. So really, Martin must be a huge fan of Norse mythology.
So what, he's waiting for Ragnarok to come before he writes that last book? Like, hurry it up. But I was going to say, like, taking it into like a game and a story, yeah, the Game Master could set up all these, you know, it's sort of common knowledge that all these signs lead up to whatever apocalyptic vision or whatever war is going to happen between these cultures, and then just start dropping them in.
And they can be as fantastic or as mundane as you'd like it. So if we want to do more like what Chris is saying about Cold War, yeah, you know, I'm just using the Cold War example very specifically, when the army moves into Poland, up to the, you know, or to the border of East Germany, they start mobilizing. Yeah, that's a pretty good sign. Or all of the missile techs have been, you know, recalled from leave and stuff.
You know, if I were,
or it could be super fantastic, like some sort of winter that doesn't end. Maybe this winter is not ending.
Well, if I were running the game, that's probably the way I'd go with it, is to mix the fantasy in there. I would set up a Cold War scenario. In fact, maybe put the players in the Cold War, but then start giving these fantastic things like the signs of Ragnarok. For example, a winter that doesn't end. It's not realistic, but I think that would be really fun.
Yeah, I mean, there's a game out there called The Day After Ragnarok by Atomic Overmind Press, and it pretty much has Ragnarok kind of happen, and
there you go.
In the modern, kind of a modern setting, and there's actually this massive groove or whatever in the world where the Midgard serpent kind of fell after being killed by Thor. So that's pretty exciting, because a lot of times we think of a post-apocalypse thinking very mundane stuff.
Yeah.
But if you mix the mundane with the fantastic, then it gives that thing a little bit more of a
different spin.
Yeah.
Spin. Yeah.
And Valkyries with machine guns, that's just an awesome image.
Yeah, I think I would play with the ideas, like, you know, prophecy is always kind of sketchy, right? So you could do a lot of stuff with how these signs are interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have the prophecy which says all these things, which is, okay, fine. It says, you know, the winter that never ends and, you know, Baldur is going to be killed by Loki. But what does it actually mean? And you could do a lot of stuff with
metaphor? Or?
Yeah, I'm thinking metaphor.
Yeah, that's the same way I was going. I couldn't think of a good example of it, but
I thought you were actually saying, like, in kind of like a realistic setting, you know, have this giant winter that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I meant. But for example, the other
but that's not really metaphor. That's like the actual winter. Like, something I read is like
the winter is a metaphor for winter.
Is that a metaphor?
No.
Then? Yeah, I was going to say
you can make it a simile. Winter is like winter.
It's as cold as, this winter is as cold as winter.
It doesn't really work.
But long. No, I get it. You could do both. Yeah, but I think what Chris was saying is, you could combine, like, when Chris was saying the mundane with the fantastic, I was thinking it was fairly literal, what he was saying, and it worked for me. But yeah, you could add a third element is the mundane, the fantastic, and the metaphorical. And yeah, like maybe some of these prophecies are coming. I mean, that would actually make it more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
If everything's a metaphor, then everybody's, well, what does that really mean? Yeah, what does that really mean? Really, but if some of them are literal, then you're like, that actually makes it more complex in that, is this particular sign a metaphor or is it literal? Because, you know, this winter is really long. I mean, I think we got our winter, our Fimble winter. Mm-hmm. It's this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's a metaphor for anything. I think it's pretty literal. But what about
Ambassador Baldur dies?
What about the ship of nails? Are they really just the fingernails and toenails of the dead? I mean,
really the Navy's not going to have trouble with that.
Yeah. I hope that's the literal one. Just one ship, done. Or a wolf, Fenris.
I imagine it being a giant ship. I mean, it's got to carry the entire army of the dead, so.
Yeah, still, that's made of fingernails. So that's not.
Well, a lot of people have died.
Okay.
Cool. Anyway.
So, no, but like I said, putting that third element in, there's a lot you can do with that. Mm-hmm. And just, it makes the kind of detective work which if you're doing a building up to the apocalypse mm-hmm. story, then the detective work would be a really interesting element to, to really play up, yeah. as opposed to kind of, when you look at a movie like, oh, let's say the Mutant Chronicles, where there's kind of like this doom scenario where the, you know, the gates have opened mm-hmm. and then it just becomes like, let's go into the dungeon and stop the machine, because we know where it is, it's right here, but it's like, what machine? Is it really a machine, or does it mean something else? Mm-hmm. What's this vessel? Is this vessel a person? Is it actual?
You could take that to go a lot of different directions, a lot of different types of campaigns. You could make it very investigative, almost like a Cthulhu-ish kind of
game. Or do you want to stop it?
There you go as well.
I mean, you could actually be on the side of, let's say, devils, mm-hmm. In that the next world's supposed to be great.
Or, you know, you could be looking the same way as the actual Norse did, you know. There is no stopping it. It's there going is no to happen, period.
You can forestall it, but once mm-hmm. the signs happen, the only thing you can do is kind of batten down the hatches, make sure,
Then why fight? And here's the question, is like, the gods know what's going to happen.
But we were talking about that
earlier. And it's like, why fight just because? Because I may as well fight? Do they need to kill... Does Thor need to fight the Midgard Serpent? Right? If you follow
as opposed to just let it kill him.
Yeah, or just not be there. And I know the kind of the Vikings have a proverb is it's something like, you know, a coward... You know,
he'll live forever?
Yeah, a coward's not going to live forever just by avoiding fighting because old age is going to kill you. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm. So it's kind of like... You may as well not be a coward.
Like, I don't know how you would really rectify this, but I kind of saw it as they almost don't have a choice, really. Like, this is just the way it's going to happen. This is the way it's going to work out, and fate, whatever, is going to spin things so that it plays out this way.
Right, and I mean, that will shape your culture. Sorry, the actual proverb that I butchered there was, a coward thinks he will live forever if he avoids his enemies, but no man escapes old age, even if he survives the spears. So, you may as well make a go of it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you die the warrior's death. You don't want to be like a shriveled old man that, you know, can't take care of himself. You want to go out while you're still fighting.
Well, it's also this, like, you can't escape fate. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, I mean, the Norse weren't fearless. I mean, even the Norse gods aren't fearless. I mean, they would run away from impossible odds and that. So, but Ragnarok's talking about the end, so it's time to end this episode.
So, yeah.
So that's Norse mythology, and we barely scratched the surface. It's a really rich mythology, and those are just a couple of the things that you could add to your game.
As a source, if anyone's interested, the GURPS Viking is a place that we looked a lot of. Vikings is a place we found a lot of our information, and it has a lot about the Vikings and their mythology as well. It's a good book.
Even if you're not running GURPS.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us. Check us out online at overheadhands.com. LEREDHANDS.com. Listen to us on Stitcher, like our episodes there, and on Facebook, post in the forums.
Mm-hmm. And find us on DriveThruRPG.
That's the other one. Thank you. Yeah. All right. Take care. See you next time.
Bye. Bye.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.